Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 105.
This week on the podcast, Kathleen Sebelius gets out while the getting's good.
Ukraine is either at war with itself or with Russia, or maybe both, but at least it's not at war with us.
Equal pay day ended up being the perfect time for GOP senators to block equal pay legislation.
America's next greatest supervillain reveals herself at a Hillary Clinton waste management convention.
The GOP's likely presidential candidates came together to talk Benghazi, IRS, and Donald Trump's newest Florida development.
And refusing to learn from President Obama's mistakes, Pope Francis is now in the selfie business.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
And you should.
And you should do that.
Yep.
Exactly. Also, pre-apologies if I hacking cough my way through the entire episode. That's because I'm dying. So be happy that I'm suffering through the podcast for you.
That's right. Oh boy.
Big
news this week.
Big news this week.
Kathleen Sebelius resigned.
Yeah.
Seemed weird.
Well, it seemed weird just because I didn't expect it.
Right.
But then I was like, oh, well, this is the exact time that she should resign.
Because I guess
people have been calling for her to resign forever because of the whole website debacle.
Right.
And we finally reached the point where, like, Obamacare is happening.
Right.
The rollout is complete.
Yeah.
If you didn't sign up, that's too bad. You're out of luck. And if you started signing up, you have, like, two more days to complete your application or it's over for you. So this is like when you go, because she, I think, had only really thought she was going to stay one term anyway.
Well,
I mean, that's what she was sort of saying.
That's the thing. I mean, and she sort of in her interview, you know, a lot of people, a lot of people left at the end of the first term, you know, that the head of the EPA left, like, Hillary Clinton left, like a lot of, you know, these secretarial positions sort of have turnover. And she's said in this interview, she was like, I've been here longer than, you know, most people who sort of like have a similar position within the administration. So she really probably was just staying through the end of open enrollment until this sort of she couldn't leave right after it. Everybody wanted her to leave in the middle, but like obviously that didn't make sense.
But I think finally, you know, people have been
to leave in the middle.
Exactly. People have been calling for her to resign, like Republicans and even some Democrats, I think, because the whole website thing was so mismanaged. But she at least is leaving sort of on a good note because they did meet their goals.
Yeah.
So at least now, after her legacy has been marred by this horrible website thing, she can be like, but it worked.
Right.
So there it is.
Of course, all the Republicans this week were like, this is a sign that it's, like, you know, it's a debacle. Like she has to leave.
That's not what happened.
What's going
on. Her and Obama discussed her leaving in January.
And
they were both agreed that she should stay till the end of open enrollment.
Right.
She did. Everything's fine. She said, you know, she did say staying wasn't really an option. I can understand.
Or leaving was
wrong. Leaving.
Right. Yeah, right.
No, staying wasn't an option.
Oh, staying further past this.
Yeah.
Right.
That she, you know. But I feel like I get what transpired. I'm not confused about what happened.
Yeah.
I feel like I expected.
It sort of came out.
It was random news
of nowhere,
because, like, what happens in April? Like, who's leaving anything in April?
Right.
Like, that's a weird time to do anything. But they've already nominated Sylvia Burwell to replace her. She's the head of the Office of Management and Budget.
Right.
That sounds like a boring job.
Who was confirmed 96-0, by the way, to that position. So it'll be interesting to see whether there's a confirmation fight in
the Obamacare position, really.
This, because, like, obviously, she was liked once before.
Right.
So
for something that had to do with managing and budgeting
things. Right, exactly. And that the head of the HHS doesn't only oversee Obamacare. So,
right.
I mean, you know, there's will be the big job, obviously. But, I mean,
at this moment.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's going to be an interesting fight that will definitely happen and will be purposeless in every way.
Yeah.
In any case, Ukraine's back on the
horizon. Oh, yeah, we skipped him last week.
We skipped him last week. No such luck this week.
No. Shenanigans in Ukraine right now.
Huge shenanigans. First of all, okay, I thought that once Crimea went its own way,
we could just call this.
We could just be over it.
Like, Crimea wanted to go. Russia wanted Crimea.
There was
sham vote over it.
Yeah,
and, like, let's
move on with our lives.
Yeah.
No such luck because now in eastern Ukraine, which is, like, where their industrial center is, so it's an economically very important region to the rest of Ukraine.
Yeah.
They've started, like these pro-Russian forces, which are maybe protesters and are maybe people that are being put up by the Russians and no one really knows.
Yeah.
But they have guns. Are, like, storming and occupying government buildings.
Yeah.
And then all of these, like, protests are springing up around them with, like, sympathizers just coming to hang out.
Yeah.
Like, shenanigans.
So weird.
So anyway, the big news was that the Ukrainian government decided to send actual troops in instead of relying on the police to deal with it, which sort of almost elevated it into civil war territory. Yeah. Either that or Russian war territory. It's hard to know what's going on.
Right, because we don't know who these people are.
But so, obviously, the Ukrainian president accused Russia of fomenting protest, and that's why he claims they sent in the troops. But a lot of people think that they just did that because the police have been absolutely useless in stopping anyone from occupying their and any other government buildings.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And no one really knows what... I think part of it is no one really knows whether the police are Russian sympathizers too or not. Like, no one knows what's going on.
Right.
But there was the first gun battle because they sent in troops.
Yeah.
And then there was, like, this pro-Russia militia in Slovanysk, which is a place that sounds very Russian. Then they had a gun battle with the Ukrainian military.
Right. Somebody died.
Somebody died. Two other people were wounded. Those are the first deaths reported in this Eastern Ukraine battle royale.
Yeah.
But it seems like everyone sort of has their own theory about what's going on. The Ukrainians are claiming that their special forces that they're sending in are made up of volunteers. They're getting 12,000 volunteers, maybe through Facebook, because they posted this information on Facebook.
You can't have volunteer special forces.
No, I was like, this is like volunteer Green Berets. Like, that's not a thing.
No.
Who is the pool that they're choosing the volunteers from?
Yeah.
The Russians compared them to neo-Nazis because it sounds like they're just rounding up any old person to have their own state militia that they made up.
Yeah.
I hope that it's made up, that it's volunteers of Ukrainian military types, not just like random volunteers. But it sounds like they're going to be training randos to protect government buildings in eastern Ukraine because they don't really have much of a military there.
Right.
So like they don't know what they're doing. They don't have supplies.
Right.
They don't have warcraft of sorts. They just have guys hanging out.
The other sort of like crazy thing about this is that I was listening. I heard an interview with somebody in Ukraine on NPR earlier this week who was basically just sort of like, you know, there are, you know, this small group of, you know, whoever these people are who have taken over some of these buildings. And then
Russians
sort of
or
like,
non-Russians.
And then the Ukrainian government who are sort of like concerned about this. And like Ukraine is just sort of like carrying on with itself.
Right. Well,
like,
at this point, this is getting old.
It's getting old, but also sort of like no one. It's a very small group of people who are sort of involved / care about that this is even sort of like a thing.
Well, and I think that's lending credence to the idea that it's Russian, that the Russians are behind it, because it's sort of like, if it's not like a mass protest and just some random guys with guns have decided to seize government buildings, that's terrorism. That's not, that's not like a mass movement.
Right.
That's not a protest movement.
No, it's not like it's not the Arab Spring that's going on.
No, exactly.
There. I mean,
I know, it's funny how much they're trying to sort of mimic Arab Spring-like activities in these sort of definitely calculated protests that are going on.
You can't do that.
You can't pretend like this is a spring.
There's not an uprising.
No. Obviously, everyone is thinking that if the Russians are behind this, this may be sort of pretext for a civil war. I mean, not a civil war, an actual war.
Right.
Literal war.
Right.
A civil war of Soviet Union satellite states that Russia would like to recolonize.
People are afraid that, you know, Russia is going to say that, well, these are, you know,
these are Russian people.
And once the Ukrainian government is sending people in and there's, you know, gunfights going on, then like that's a good pretext for Russia to just invade the rest of Ukraine.
Can we discuss for a moment what it means to be a Russian-speaking person in Ukraine? Because Ukrainians also speak a dialect of Russian.
I know.
It's the same. It's like if we were claiming that, like, British people, they're, like, mutually understandable.
Right.
They're not exactly the same, but they're both Russian. They're dialects of Russian, basically.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not, it's like if we were sort of like, oh, like, there are parts of the South where I can't understand a damn thing they say. Like, it's like if we were at war with them because we don't speak the same language.
It's why you have to subtitle, Here Comes Honey Boo Boo.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like how, like, in the Bayou, there are people who, to me, literally sound like they have foreign accents.
Yeah.
Because they do. Because
they're
Cajun.
Yeah.
They speak French. And then they also speak English with a French accent and call that an accent. So, like, this is, like, when we talk about Russian-speaking regions of Ukraine, we're talking more, I think, about, like, a cultural sympathy than anything else, because
it is
they're just speaking different dialects of the same language.
Right.
They're different dialects, obviously, but like it's like having a strong accent.
Right.
It's not like Switzerland, where like some of the country speaks Italian and some of it speaks German and some of it speaks French. Like, these are the same language ultimately.
Yeah.
Anyway, the U.S. is also worried that the Russians are behind this. They talked to Lavrov,
Sergei Lavrov,
their foreign minister, and he denied it, and that was meaningless. It's like, what the fuck is he going to say? Yes?
Yes, actually, we did that.
You're right. You've caught us. Then Yanukovych, the ex-president of Ukraine, who's like hiding out in Russia with a bunch of his ex-ministers,
yeah,
got on the media, got all up in the media's grill, talking about how the CIA is somehow behind the Ukrainians' decision to use force, okay. Like they're trying to cause a war within Ukraine. he obviously the CIA denied this. He sounds like he has an agenda of sorts.
I was going to say, like, what would our agenda be in that?
Right. Like, yes, we definitely would love to start a war in Ukraine. Like, we. If ever there was a situation where we have no incentive to start a war...
Right, I mean, we love a good war. We love starting a war. We're not trying to get involved in this
war. No, this is stupid. What do we gain from protecting Ukraine from Russia?
Nothing.
We gain nothing from being involved with Ukraine.
No.
We gain nothing from pissing off Russia. Like, no. We gain nothing from nothing. This is not a... The CIA... If the CIA is behind this, I would question their agenda myself.
Yeah.
And I hope that they're not.
And their intelligence.
And their intelligence, right. Which is,
I would question them being the central intelligence
agency. I was going to say,
that's
not the center of intelligence in the country if that's what they're up to.
No.
But in any case, the protesters are asking for autonomy votes a la the Crimea vote.
Yeah.
We'll see. That doesn't seem like that should be happening ever.
We're not just going to give some random protesters who took over a building. Like, right.
Well, and I would say, like, in Crimea, the way it sounded from the portrayal of the events, it sounded like everyone was sort of into this in Crimea.
Yeah.
It's hard for us to know what's going on in eastern Ukraine, but it doesn't sound like there's massive popular support. It sounds like there's some, like, people stirring up some shit.
That's what's happening.
Yeah, so...
Some shit stirs.
Meanwhile, now it seems like we're going to have to further our sanctions against Russia, which is annoying because I was already over having to sanction Russia in the first
place.
Right,
well, we were just sanctioning, like people's personal bank accounts or something.
Right, it's like some of the dumbest sanctions in history.
Right.
Samantha Power was... I think she was on This Week or something like that,
mm-hmm.
talking about how now they're talking about increasing sanctions to hit some of the sectors that actually matter,
sure.
like energy and banking and mining and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Apparently, according to her, our current sanctions against Russia, which are pitiful, have already caused the ruble to hit an all-time low and the stock market's down 20%. Maybe that's just luck.
I was going to say, that's an accidental thing that happened
right.
at
Russia's
the same time.
Russia's economy is shitty because things are shitty or for whatever reason.
Our stocks are down.
Exactly.
Really
yeah.
low, too.
No, that's true.
This is probably this could be a world market situation right now.
But we're taking credit for
right.
that.
Like,
we're mysteriously probably not going to take credit for our own markets being down, but... Us no. with our pathetic sanctions against Russia.
Right, are we sanctioning ourselves?
Right, well, we might be. I feel like we have been sanctioning ourselves quite a bit.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the sort of most exciting thing that happened this week, if you were to consult social media in any way,
yeah.
was that there was a fake holiday on Tuesday called Equal Pay Day
uh-huh.
that was made up by somebody fake.
Democrats, presumably.
Democrats, yeah, that Obama used to issue two new executive orders that were basically taking what the Paycheck Fairness Act is supposed to do for the nation at large and applying it to federal contractors, which
right.
is where his authority in that
right.
matter ends.
This is what he's been doing. He did it with
yeah.
minimum wage. He's
exactly,
sort of just
yeah.
like anything that he can,
anything that
sort
he can
of issue, a
issue
order
an order for
doing.
That has been languishing in Congress for
right.
millions
right.
of years.
He's just doing,
he's
with,
just
federal
doing with federal contractors.
Yeah.
So one of the executive orders stops contractors from retaliating against employees who talk about how much money they make. I would like to take this as an opportunity to say that everyone should talk about how much money they make
absolutely.
With everyone at their workplace.
Yes.
Or in life. I mean...
It's interesting, too, because, like, it's so taboo in America, but, like, this
yeah.
is a thing that,
this
like,
is a thing
it's,
that
it's only taboo.
It happens in other countries, and it works.
It works.
First of all, it's one of the reasons that women make less than men, because women can't find out how much men make, so
right.
they don't realize
that
they're negotiating themselves to a less...
That was the whole thing with Lilly Ledbetter, yeah. is that she found out, you know, after working, like, 40 years at a job, that she had ultimately lost out, like, on hundreds of thousands
exactly.
of dollars, because she'd been making, you know, half of people who had been there less that were doing the same job we're making. I mean, that's...
No, you never... And this is the thing that I think people don't think about when it comes to this policy, because it's sort of socially taboo to talk about this at
right.
work. People think that they're protecting themselves by
right.
not mentioning it.
Right. People...
You're only benefiting your bosses.
Yeah.
You are only benefiting your bosses. There is not a world in which people's pay is being cut because they're talking
no.
about this. It's only to protect the people in your office who aren't making as much.
It is all... Any workers,
yeah.
it is in their best interest to
yeah.
know what every single other person makes.
Absolutely,
at the company
this
that
is
they
the
work
thing.
At
is like if you are worried because you're in management and you like don't want your employees to find out you're making 20 times their salary or whatever.
Well,
like
that's a problem.
That's
but
a,
I mean,
that's a problem for them though. It's not a problem
right.
for you that your employees are making too little money,
right.
unless you're the one making them not make money.
right.
And like if you're a middle manager, like, it's not your company. You don't give a shit.
Right.
You know, it's not your money. It's only your money if you're the boss. And if you're the boss, you shouldn't be fucking paying your employees so
little. Well, I was going to say, and you didn't, yeah, as a middle management person, you're not the person who set the salary.
No, exactly.
So you shouldn't be embarrassed if you're making twice as much as someone else. It's not your fault.
No.
I mean, you wouldn't tell your boss that you didn't want to make that amount of money
exactly.
because, you know, Susie
Everyone
Q over here
isn't, money.
Is making less than me.
No.
Like that.
That's not how it happens.
That's not how it works.
But it improves everyone's ability to negotiate if everyone knows how much everyone is making.
Yeah.
And it also, it makes workplaces happier. They have found this, that people are happier in workplaces when, because if they know how much everyone is making, they don't constantly worry that they're being screwed over.
Right, they're not suspect
of everyone. Which is what I constantly worry about all
the
time.
Of course, yeah.
And that ultimately makes the workplace more effective because people aren't sitting around stewing because they assume that so-and-so who's actually making less money than them is making more. This has happened to me in my own life.
Yeah.
Employees that I thought were, that were at the same level as me that I thought were making more money than me were not.
Yeah.
And that it has only benefited us to talk about it.
Yeah.
So it benefits women to talk about it because it keeps men from keeping secret how they're making a ton more money.
Yeah.
But it benefits anyone
Everyone.
In the world to talk about this, just
yep.
if you work in a place.
Yep.
And also, I think it benefits people in general to talk about their finances because you don't make dumb financial decisions if you sort of, like, pool financial knowledge with your friends and family.
Right.
Like, you're less likely to make a dumb decision. You're not less likely to go underwater on a mortgage or something like that.
Yeah, totally.
Or to take on a mortgage that you can't afford if you have discussed and sort of, like, understood that the general world of knowledge, you know, insists that you not pay more than your paycheck in rent or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, this is just good economics.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm all into that. The second executive order required that those contractors offer the government data about how much they're paying people by gender and race, which is also a good thing because then we can know.
We can, yeah, exactly.
We can't know if there's a problem if we don't know. So that helps us know.
Yep.
Meanwhile, in a sort of obnoxious slash hilarious move, the American Enterprise Institute, which is a conservative think tank, decided to analyze the White House's payroll to see what women make compared to men there.
Yeah.
And obviously found there was a discrepancy, because there's a discrepancy in every place on earth, because women don't get the same fancy jobs that men get.
Right, they didn't do it. They didn't do it by job. They didn't compare people who had the same jobs. They just generically compared men
everyone.
And women.
So women in the White House are making 88 cents on the dollar.
So the Republicans ran with that all week.
Right. But they were talking, running their mouth about
fake
that.
Fake stat.
It's a fake stat. Jay Carney pointed out that there are more women in lower level positions in the White House than there are men, so like it sort of skewed it lower.
Right.
You know, one day we hope that women and men will both be equally represented in all positions everywhere.
Yes.
But in a small sample, you can't always make that happen. So, anyway, Republicans were enamored with that fact.
Yep.
It's like all they were talking about. Until Wednesday, when they were busy on the defensive because they blocked the Paycheck Fairness Act for like the third or fourth time.
Yeah.
So I think the Democrats, thinking that it was equal pay week or whatever, thought they could really get one over on the Republicans.
Well, good on them. I mean, it's a midterm year. Like, I feel like this is
do it.
Smart.
Well,
this is good politics.
All of the coverage of this focused on how it was going to impact their election results. Like, no one was talking about the actual policy. It would be nice, by the way, if we could just pass the Paycheck Fairness Act so that everyone could avoid retaliation when they talk about how much they make.
The Republicans should want to just pass it because then they wouldn't have to worry about all
exactly.
this.
Exactly. Also, this is not something, like, this is something that in the long run benefits everybody who's not a boss, and obviously they only care about bosses, but like it's not a sort of it's an easy way for them to score some points with women. Like, I don't know why they're just so bad at scoring points with women. Obviously sent all the female GOP senators out to get all up in the media about how this isn't doing anything. One of their most genius responses or quotes came from Marsha Blackburn, who
is often having genius thoughts.
She was talking to Bob Schieffer, and he asked her about, their opposition to this bill.
Yeah.
And she said, "I find this war on women rhetoric almost silly. It is Republicans that have led the fight for women's equality. Go back through history and look at who was the first women to vote, to get elected to office, to go to Congress, 4 out of 5 governors."
Mm-hmm.
Now, she makes a good point, I think, that early Republicans were doing better with women than Democrats.
Sure.
She fails to put that in the context of the Republicans having gradually shifted to being women-hating, horrible bigots.
Well, this is similar to the, talking about, the Republicans being the party of Lincoln.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, like, it's not, it's just,
like, it's not, not anymore.
Right.
So, get over yourselves.
Yeah.
Like, there was a time when, like, the Dixie Democrats were, like, some of the worst people out there.
Sure.
I get it. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not afraid to say that there are some Democrats in the history of Democrats that really were shitty.
Yeah.
As people and Democrats. But, like, you don't get to...
Come on.
The Republicans didn't give women the right to vote.
No, you
and
don't
then
get...
Like, don't
you don't get
us.
To own that.
You don't get to own that. No. When women's equality is... As we are discussing it as a modern concept, is a more modern concept than what she's talking about.
Yes, exactly.
It's not about women having the right to vote right now. It's about women having the right to, like, live the same lives that men
yeah.
and have the same opportunities that men have.
Well, she thinks that it's about women's access to capital.
Yes.
That's the entire problem well, could just be solved by women having better access to, like, getting loans for
reason,
small businesses or
this,
something.
Like the reason that the GOP is pretending that this doesn't address the issue is... ended up being, like, enumerated as a very vague list of problems they believe
right.
small businesses
well, they
are
think
facing.
The, they think the issue is something entirely different, which it is wrong.
It's the problem. Yeah, because they were like, oh, women start more small businesses than men, so really the issue is about small business and access to capital and Obamacare, obviously.
Yes.
Obamacare
yeah.
naturally is causing women great pain because mm-hmm. it's providing them with health care.
Right.
But and regulations, of mm-hmm. course, which are oh. the other big problem women face.
Yeah. And Benghazi.
And Benghazi.
No, I
and the IRS.
Uh-huh, yeah.
but in any case, this was sort of the natural tactic that the GOP falls back on, where they pretend that the issue is actually having something to do with small business.
Right.
A vague issue that has to do with small business, where they pretend that women are not related to the issues women face. Or something, you know? The issues women face don't have anything to do with women. So
yeah.
That's fine. It was also an anniversary week for the Civil Rights Act.
Yes.
There was a big summit at the Johnson Library that celebrated Lyndon Johnson's achievements in the civil rights area.
Yep.
And everyone went.
All the living
All
presidents
the
were
living
there.
Presidents were there. Obama delivered the keynote speech. And, you know, he's always talking about civil rights and
right.
obviously how civil rights legislation has resulted in him getting to be president.
Yes.
So he's a good guy to talk about these things.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, the celebration was really focused on the Great Society initiative, Johnson's
right.
big Great Society thing,
yeah.
which was really defined by the Civil Rights Law in 1964 and then the Voting Rights Act in 1965.
Yeah.
It was supposed to just be sort of like vaguely about increasing economic opportunity, but he just did that by giving people civil rights.
Right.
And then, interestingly, they also had panels that were discussing some of the modern, you know, civil rights issues that we have been talking about more recently, like gay marriage and women's rights and
yep.
immigration and, you know, access to education,
education
stuff like
right.
that. And mysteriously, music and social consciousness.
Sure, why not?
Which was a thing that
Just
they were talking
in
about
there.
In there.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, it's been sort of nice because Johnson is always kind of like, he's sort of like the great civil rights president that was so ultimately disappointing because of the Vietnam War.
Right, that's sort of
that's we remember
what that's
his,
what we
his
remember
legacy
him
is
for.
So marred by the Vietnam
yeah.
War. And especially in the last few years because we've had war on the mind for the last decade because
yeah.
we've been busy going to war ourselves and
right.
the Vietnam War is sort of like the perfect example of why you don't do that.
Right.
But it's nice to see that we're remembering that
right.
on the domestic front he was one of the great presidents.
Right.
It's too bad that he was so terrible in foreign policy because he was like really one of the best domestic. He's like up there with FDR as
yeah, well,
on the
I
domestic
mean,
sense,
these
you know,
were
the domestic
part
sense,
of his,
passing some
I
of
mean,
the most important legislation.
When he was, you know, he sort of like pitched, you know, all of these, you know, laws that he got passed. What was it? The Great Society, is that what
yeah,
we called it, or whatever.
Great,
as sort of,
yeah.
Right. As sort of like the second New Deal.
Yeah.
I mean, like that's basically what he was.
Right.
That's what he sold them as.
Exactly.
Basically. And the other reason that I think that he's been having such a resurgence lately is that he was sort of like known for getting things done, like getting
right.
all these bills through there. And he was often sort of like known to do it by, you know, whatever means necessary.
Well, I
and
mean,
I think
they had to overcome filibusters
right,
on
and a lot
the
of,
Civil Rights Act.
A lot of
were,
Democrats, I feel like, have been sort of using
wishing.
It, using his name as sort of like what they wish that Obama would be sort
yeah.
of doing, because he was sort of like a head knocker,
yeah.
you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, he would sort of, you know, was sort of like known to, you know, threaten your families or
he,
you
well,
if you didn't vote
he,
the way that he wanted
he
you to.
He was no Jimmy Carter.
No.
He was not a sort of gentle peanut farmer.
Right.
And I that is, I think, what it takes in a... Because he was facing a very divided country at the time, not
yeah.
only because of the Vietnam War, which he was making all the wrong decisions about.
Right,
but
it was...
They faced massive protests within the Senate. Massive. There was a big filibuster.
Right.
Strom Thurmond was there.
It was for the Civil Rights Act. It was a very tumultuous time, too. I mean,
it was contentious legislation. It was a tumultuous time. We were busy. You know, it was a time that there was sort of like this last outburst of like horribly overt racism that was like acceptable in certain parts of the country.
Yeah.
And that there were really blatant discriminatory voting laws in most of the South.
Yeah.
I mean, this was a terrifying time. So it's sort of fun to remember that about Johnson and not have to think about how the Vietnam War was some shitty nonsense. But so in any case, we were one of Johnson's biographers, because there was a lot of discussion about Johnson biographies. A lot of people being like, oh, but he didn't do it alone, because that was like, that's what you say when someone is getting all the credit for doing something great.
Yeah.
But apparently in 1963, the Attorney General at the time, who was Robert Kennedy, said in a meeting of intellectuals that he believed that there could be a, quote, Negro president in 40 years.
Yep.
Only missed it by five. That's, I think, sort of an exciting telling thing about the Kennedys and about the fact that we're like, things are terrible, but we're sort of like getting there, you know?
Yeah.
We're doing it.
Yeah.
We're...
It's funny that LBJ was from Texas, too.
I know.
Wouldn't be having anyone
his
from
presidential
Texas.
Library is from Austin. Is in Austin, yeah. though.
Well,
he wasn't from Texas.
Right.
He's from Austin.
Yeah.
That's a different place. That's sure. That's as people in Austin like to say, it's not really real Texas. But also, as I like to say, it's still in Texas, so like don't move to Austin.
right, exactly.
Like you still have to live in Texas to live in Austin. People forget that, I think, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Or like people, you know, people in like Marfa, which is like a big artsy colony in Texas.
Never heard of that.
Yeah, Marfa is like the other thing that people are always talking about in Texas. But it's also like...
Austin or Marfa? Then you have to live in a place called Marfa.
First of all. Second of all, you're in Texas.
Yeah.
So like, don't be there.
Oh gosh. The news from the campaign trail.
Yeah, the campaign trail is heating up.
Really is.
Yeah. Hillary Clinton has continued to speak to anyone and everyone who will listen to her.
Yeah, she was at the Institute of Scrap Recycling Industries in Las Vegas. That's a thing.
That's a thing. And they got Hillary Clinton to speak there. So
yep.
That's...
But it's so weird because, like, these people will literally go anywhere that will pay them. I remember the first year that I went to Promax, which is our sort of, like...
Right, that's your industry.
Our industry for, like, TV promos, which is, like, okay.
Right.
Bill Clinton was the keynote speaker at it.
That's crazy.
When I went to it in New York. I was like, what is he doing here?
Yeah, like, don't go to Promax.
Getting a paycheck.
Yeah.
That's what he was doing. Yeah. That's what she's doing here. She's getting a paycheck.
Yeah.
Bless her heart. I mean,
she's got to make money somehow, guys.
The Clintons have to eat.
Right.
But anyway, she got a shoe chucked at her head.
And that would have been the funniest thing that happened.
It wasn't.
It was
we
like,
thought it was.
We thought it was because that's already a hilarious thing.
Right. And her response was pretty good.
She,
in a very short sentence, she was able to sort of, you know,
sum up everything.
Criticize the woman's throwing arm and also potentially out herself as a lesbian.
Right.
But because she was like, it was a good thing. What'd she say? She said it was thank goodness that she didn't play softball like I did.
Right.
Because it was apparently a poor throw by this woman. It did not hit her.
It didn't hit her. She ducked, though.
She had to dodge. Yeah.
So.
But anyway, this woman has...
Is the real story.
Is the real story. She has a history. We still sort of like don't really know why
she was throwing shoes.
Did this. But we found out who she was, and Colorado officials have confirmed that she was escorted out of the courtroom after sort of like a bizarre incident where she showed up with her head shaved and like a fancy red dress to a court hearing for James Holmes, which was the Aurora shooter.
Right.
And she arrived at the courtroom and she claimed that she had evidence vital to the defense of James Holmes. And so she was then detained. But then after she was detained...
We found out more.
This is where the goodness comes
in.
Because she filed for a restraining order, but a curious type of restraining order that is sort of a fake restraining order because it was sort of the mental variety.
Yes.
Because in the court document, she was quoted as saying, James enters my head like Dennis Quaid in Inner Space, and he zooms to my heart and plays with it and forces me to care for him. Which is crazy. But then it goes on to say, I seek a restraining order to stop Holmes from entering my mind through subliminal messaging and causing me to be obsessed with him on a daily basis.
That's the greatest restraining order I've ever heard of.
That's it.
A mental restraining order.
She
wants James Holmes to stop entering her mind.
Like Dennis Quaid.
I mean, that's...
So she's a real kook.
She's a kook.
She's been released, but she needs
to Allison maybe Ernst, be somewhere. Please be everywhere.
I know.
File more documents.
Don't hurt anyone.
Don't hurt anyone.
But carry on.
Carry
with
on filing things, though. Uh-huh. You're doing it right.
Yep.
Wow. So that was what was going on the Democratic campaign trail. Mm-hmm. The fake Democratic campaign trail. Right. The fake Republican campaign trail was also heating up in New Hampshire.
New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Everybody was there.
Everyone was there. And by everybody, we mean Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Mike Huckabee, and I believe Arnold Schwarzenegger.
He might have been. We don't know.
Donald Trump is what I meant to say. And Newt Gingrich.
Right. Donald Trump is a similar sort of like celebrity.
Genre of ridiculousness. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
They were at the Freedom Summit, which was an event sponsored by Americans for Prosperity and Citizens United. So everybody, you don't want to sponsor anything. slash the Koch brothers.
Yeah.
And they were having a discussion about 2016, which is early.
Right. Like, I mean, you know, the New York Times article about this sort of like, you know, properly noted that, like, yes, we can sort of assume that all of these people, like, have been acting like they're going to be running for president. But to show up at an event where it's basically only people who are probably going to be running for president or who have run for president.
Ballsy.
Who are, you know, sponsored by the Koch brothers and talk about 2016 before the midterm primaries have happened. Like, most people haven't even had a midterm primary yet. I mean, it's 2.5 years away. Not two. I mean, it's like,
no,
it's a
we have an election to get through before we get there.
Right, exactly. So it was a little crazy that they were all there, but they're all peddling their same wares right now. They all
be more have their excited. Own. This is giving them so much time to turn off potential voters. That's all that they start with voters and then they just turn them off. Like, that's how they operate. So this is like years of entertainment in the making.
Totally.
That's starting so early. It's so exciting.
Well, and Rand Paul,
I know
Rand, if you're listening. But you're not. I have some advice for you.
Yeah.
Because I still think Rand Paul is batshit crazy. But
crazy
he's doing enough sense talking right now that I think it would potentially behoove him to not be showing up at events like this.
Yes.
Because
agreed.
He is trying to be, you know, the nominee of a broad party right
he's
now.
Trying to be he's, the Ron
he's
Paul
trying
of the
to
next
do it.
Election,
and
I
like
think.
He's and that's sort of like his whole shtick right now, which is an odd shtick.
Especially because he came onto the scene as a Tea Partier.
Right. But like he sort of like his big quote that he said, because he's sort of like calling out all the Republicans right now for like not being broad enough. And he said, the door's not going to open up for the African American community to the Hispanic community until we have something to offer. And then he said that Republicans should care more that minorities are so overdepressed in the prison population, overrepresented. It doesn't even mean anything. Overrepresented in the prison population. Rand Paul is at a Republican event sponsored by Citizens United, talking about too many black people being in prison.
Like he didn't get booed off the stage,
right?
That's crazy.
That's
ballsy.
Yeah,
I know.
I don't trust that he has
the right
any
intentions.
Policies that are going to solve this.
No.
But like,
this is an interesting thing though, because it's the first time that someone is really trying to pay even lip service to this issue.
Right.
And to do it at the wackiest of wacky events, because that's what he's been doing. He's been doing this all over the place. But
like, this
it's
is a
only
thing that,
at Crazy Pants events like this.
This is a thing that you go and tell Bill Maher or something.
He's at a Tea Party event right now.
He's at a Tea Party event.
He's not on Bill Maher.
No.
No, it's wild.
It's weird.
And everyone else is talking about some nonsense, because Ted Cruz is just talking about how he's not trying to do anything in Washington at all except hang out.
Probably in his sort of like most brazen quote ever.
Right.
I mean, we all know that he's not trying to do
anything.
He's
not up to help it.
He's proving, he's proven himself to be unhelpful, but he basically just came out and said that was his intention, because he said, I'm spending my time not focusing on Washington, not trying to convince Washington of anything, because they ain't listening. What I'm trying to do instead is help energize and mobilize the American people. So he's gone to Washington to do nothing.
To hang out.
Just, he's declared it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, he's gone to schmooze wealthy lobbyists so that he has a career when his freaking presidential ambitions crash and burn.
Right, as they will. Yeah.
And then Donald Trump was there.
These other two people who were there were just like, had their own separate agendas from running for president, because Donald Trump and Newt Gingrich both had such
just hawking
things.
Their own wares.
They were hawking. Yeah, exactly. Because Donald Trump basically spent the majority of his speech talking about his new development in Florida. He said it's going to be the most beautiful resort in the country. He talked about the golf course that was going to be there. He just went on a tangent about this like new
how brilliant
thing that he's
building
in Florida. Yeah. And then the best quote of the entire day, because he has some foundation for wounded vets, which is great, but he talked about his work that he's doing for that, and he said, I meet so many of them. with the legs, the arms, and the trauma. Like, what?
Here's a question. Semantics, but if it's a place for wounded vets...
They don't have those.
Did he mean that he was meeting them without legs and arms?
Right. The only thing that of the three of those things that they have is the trauma. They don't have the legs or the arms.
So he doesn't know. He's just a guy. Oh, same words.
That's the craziest thing ever.
Meanwhile, Newt Gingrich is just talking about his two films and his podcast.
and his book.
Oh, and his book, yeah.
Yeah.
No, he's got the trifecta going.
Right.
He's just maybe Gingrich Productions is back off the
maybe
off the
it
ground.
Is, I don't know. Maybe he's working with Rick Santorum.
Yeah, it would be a
Where
real
was
slap
he?
In the I know. Well, yeah. He's out.
Interesting. He's not. He's running again. I guarantee you.
You think?
Oh yeah.
I think that he's gonna last minute pull out and in a less last minute way than he did last time.
Oh, okay.
Right. Because I think that it was too embarrassing his pull out last time. Because it got so down to the wire. And, like, he's not electable.
Right. No,
so
he's not.
It's, but anyway,
he thinks he is, though.
The only person that we've not discussed so far is Mike Huckabee.
Right.
Who was...
He gave... He knew his audience.
Yeah.
In a great example of knowing your audience.
Yes.
He just went on a tirade about Benghazi and the IRS scandal and voter ID laws.
Yeah, just talking about that.
Hammered all three of those home.
Yeah.
That was
then
it.
His most notable quote was a real gem.
Yeah.
Says, in his folksy way, my gosh, I'm beginning to think there's more freedom in North Korea sometimes than there is in the United States.
Interesting.
Big mistake. When I go to the airport, I have to get in the surrender position while people put hands all over me. And I have to provide photo ID in a couple of different forms and prove that I'm really not going to terrorize the airplane. A few points. Multiple forms of ID? That's not happening to me at the airport.
That's never happened to anyone.
I share his concerns about the new security checkpoint.
You can skip it. You do that.
I skip it all the time.
I skip it all the time.
I opt for the pat down. I've realized finally that it's way more uncomfortable for them than it is for me. Like, it's not great to be pat down by a stranger. Yeah. I get that. I'm not trying to be patted down by strangers.
No.
But it's worse to have to pat down a stranger.
Yeah.
And I'm banking on that. Plus, a pilot once cheered me on when I was doing it, and so I feel good about it. Meanwhile, Mike Huckabee, big misstep to pretend like North Korea is somehow equivalent to having to go through security on an airplane.
I mean, come on.
If there's one thing any American politician or pseudo-politician should know, it's that those are fighting words to compare North Korea to anything.
Yeah.
And is there like are Republicans, and I'm not aware of this, like somehow in favor of getting rid of airplane security?
That's what I was going to say.
Because they're like
it's
obsessed
so
with security.
I know.
We have these crazy laws because Republicans
right.
wanted
yeah, we
to
have,
pass
that's
them.
Why we have to take off our shoes.
Yeah. It's because of craziness that Republicans were hawking around 9/11.
Yeah.
So like... Do they now believe in a security-free agenda? Like, what? These are
know.
The people that want to build a wall between us and Mexico.
Well, they want a freedom agenda.
Yes.
That's what it is.
This is a freedom. Yes, this would be quite the freedom agenda.
Yeah, it would.
Unfortunately, their policy doesn't back it.
Right. But he really brought it home.
Yes.
Because he got back to voting rights.
Yes.
He said, but if I want to go vote, I don't need a thing. All I got to do is show up, and I can give them anybody's name, and that's okay.
Yeah. You need ID to fly? Where you could potentially murder tons of people, but not to vote, where you can't murder a single person.
No.
So.
And we've proven that we don't have voter fraud.
Exactly.
And there's no study has ever shown any voter fraud.
Right.
Like, it's just not a thing that's happening.
It's not a thing that's happening. And as I think a lot of us have always said, if you believe strongly enough to try to vote more than once, you're welcome to. You know? If you are a person who wants to commit voter fraud because you care that much about voting.
Vote early and often.
Vote early and often. Exactly. Yep. So.
Oh, boy. Anyway. He had another.
He was on a roll this week.
Gem this week. Well, he had a few other gems.
We're
entering the Mike Huckabee portion of the podcast right now. Because we've got a couple more Huckabee stories. Because he's a pastor. So he's always talking about the Bible. That's his thing. But he had a few odd Bible quotes this week. But one, he's been defending his position on gay marriage recently, which I would contend that he should not be doing. Because, like, this is another thing that just, like, similar to so many of the issues.
Talking about legitimate rape.
He doesn't have to be talking about this.
Just
like, there
don't
was a,
say it.
There was a Supreme Court case. The states are deciding, you know, most of these are deciding it on themselves. Like, judges are sort of, like, you know, getting it. Like, it's just not a thing that he has to be saying, and we've already established that this is turning young Republicans off.
Yeah.
Or turning people...
young people.
Into young people, turning them into young Democrats.
Right, exactly.
Like, so it's just sort of like, don't be talking about this. But he, like, dug up some quote from Obama in 2008 where he, said that he was against gay marriage because gay marriage, the Bible is against gay marriage, right. Which
that's
is
what
not.
He was saying at the
but,
time.
I mean, anyway.
That was his thing.
That was his thing at the time, yeah. And he was also, like, at the Saddleback Ranch thing, or which is what, right. What's his face's, you know, some famous, like, megachurch pastor thing.
Oh, yeah.
Remember
yeah.
when he went to what's that and he caught or sort of caught some flack for, like, going in the first place?
Yes, I do remember that.
That was when he was running for president. Yes. That's where he was. So it's, like, again, another prime example of knowing your audience.
Exactly.
I mean, anyway. But so Huckabee was, like, he said, I would ask the president, were you lying then? Are you lying now? Or did the Bible get rewritten?
Interestingly, not the only time this week he mentioned the Bible being
rewritten. He's been talking about the Bible being rewritten a lot. It seems to be a big concern of his.
Especially, I mean, specifically in regards to gay marriage.
Yes.
He seems to believe that the Bible is asserting unequivocally that it is against gay marriage and that all of the people who support gay marriage are somehow hoping the Bible is, or thinking the Bible has been rewritten.
Well, if there's one thing all of our listeners should know.
Yes.
It's that the Bible doesn't say anything about gay marriage.
Right, I would imagine it doesn't.
Just, it doesn't.
So, that's a good fact to keep in mind as we read you his quote from Iowa. He said, when people say, why don't you just kind of get on the right side of history, which acknowledges that he knows that there's a right side of history that he's not on, I said, you've got to understand, this for me is not about the right side or the wrong side of history. This is the right side of the Bible. And unless God rewrites it, edits it, sends it down with his signature on it, it's not my book to change. Folks, that's why I stand where I stand. Can we discuss something important, which is, how do you know what God's signature looks like, and how can you spot a forgery?
Right.
If God did rewrite the Bible, and we got a signed copy of said Bible that God rewrote, how would we know that that was the correct signature?
We wouldn't know.
And did God sign the original
Bible? It's not in the original. No.
No. Mm-hmm. Is there? So can we even prove that God signs things in the first place? We can't.
We can't.
Brent and I would probably argue that for different reasons, but I think there's a number of reasons to think
What we can prove is who the actual human beings were that did write the Bible.
Correct. Yeah.
Those things can be
proven.
None of them were named God.
No.
They were all people.
They were all named people that
alive.
Were people
that had names who wrote the Bible.
Exactly.
We know who they are.
Right. It's history has
we know
this
when
out
they
for
did
us.
It. It's well documented.
And we can even trace the development of the myths that became the Bible myths from other traditions.
Yeah.
So we know a lot about who was up to writing the Bible and who could have potentially signed it.
Right.
None of those people
are God.
Are God. And unfortunately, he's not now in a position to edit it and then re-sign it because he didn't write it in the first place and he also has never signed it.
No.
So it's going to be tough.
If he did rewrite it, it would be some serious plagiarism because... Because he didn't write it the first time.
He didn't write the first one.
So it would be an entire book of stolen ideas.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would like to hear Mike Huckabee answer to that.
He wouldn't even know what to... He would look at us like we were headless.
It's so true. Meanwhile, we also have like a real gem of a campaign going on for a Virginia congressional seat, because Frank Wolf is retiring.
Yes.
And the state assemblyman who is running in his place for the GOP...
Yeah.
Just has, like, some wonderfully colorful quotes a la Huckabee, but worse.
Yes.
That we just thought we should share with you.
Yeah, his name's Bob Marshall. And a lot of doozies.
Yeah.
And so, starting with an interview that he gave to the Boston Globe back in 1989, where he said that he wouldn't make exceptions for abortions, even in the case of rape and incest, stating... What if incest is voluntary? Sometimes it is. In my house, it's voluntary. So I don't know
if you guys are.
Right. Oh, God.
Like.
I mean. Where do you begin with that?
We can't. We're just going to move on. Because
next.
There's nowhere for us to begin with that.
Yeah.
He also was, when talking about the decision written by Kennedy in the gay marriage cases, said, for all I know, Kennedy is a homosexual.
Ah, yes.
That must be why he cares about this
right.
issue. You would only ever vote in favor of this if you yourself were gay.
For all everyone else knows, he's not.
Right.
Actually, but
not
for all this guy
not
knows.
Bob.
He doesn't know. Well, Bob doesn't know much.
So
for
true.
All he knows.
All he knows is what incest looks like at his house.
Right, exactly. And in 2010, he claimed that, this is maybe the best one.
Yeah.
Claimed that women who have abortions often have children later that have disabilities. And he's quoted as saying, the number of children who are born subsequent to a first abortion who have handicaps has increased dramatically. I don't know that I trust
that as a
fact. And he said, why? Because when you abort the firstborn of any, nature takes its vengeance on the subsequent children. What?
Well, GOP candidates love to make claims like this that have never been supported by any type of science or fact ever in history. Because once you're willing to say this, you're willing to say, like, then you can just make up anything. Like, that's, at the point that you're willing to make this comment, you're willing to make any comment. This is
exactly.
This is a comment that just sort of represents all comments, really. What do you think about it?
Right. And he's sort of is most famous.
It's very fire and brimstone-y.
Yeah, totally.
He might, which version of the Bible is it that is, isn't there like one version of the Bible that's like a lot more fire and brimstone-y than the other or something like that? Or maybe, one sect of Christianity that's like a lot more fire and brimstone-y in their interpretation of the Bible?
Yeah, I mean, Baptists and and anybody who sort of like is really into Revelation.
Yeah.
Which is like not even a thing.
The Revelation
thing. Like,
people.
I'm always shocked to even learn what's in it because like, even now, as a person who spent 32 years in the church, like, don't think that I've cracked open the book of Revelation because it's...
Sounds scary.
Wacky.
Yeah.
Well, also, it's like somebody's dream.
Right, yeah.
So it's like that they just...
Anything and everything can happen like, in that situation.
Not what's, you know...
Right,
if you believe in the rapture...
He's the political version of the book of Revelation.
He totally is, yeah. But anyway, he sort of is probably most famous, anyway, for getting all of the Virginia politicians in trouble for sort of signing on to, it was his bill that was going to require women to undergo ultrasounds before having abortions. And that sort of like really
that
became Bob
Cuccinelli,
McDonald's.
That...
Yeah. I mean, and it really was sort of Bob McDonald's undoing, at least before his actual undoing where he's potentially going to go to jail.
Right.
But I mean,
before the one that really undid him.
But that was sort of like probably the thing that, initially undid his potential vice presidency.
Yeah.
Because
absolutely.
He was a huge sort of, and then that sort of like
they were talking
sent
about him
into like
we were all talking about him. And
he caught so much flack for that from all sides.
He became totally irrelevant after it was one of the people that got taken down by these, you know, anti-abortion laws.
Yeah.
And in his case, it wasn't even anything he said or did. It was just his support of this guy's personhood law. So this is an exciting Virginia is up to some exciting things.
Love it.
Because you forget that like Virginia is also like the suburb of DC that like Virginia is a crazy state.
It's a crazy state.
They are up to some shenanigans.
Right. Well, and they have the same you know really like the Republican primary voters there are just as crazy as they are in a lot of the crazy places.
Yeah.
That's why they currently don't have the governorship there because probably anyone other than Ken Cuccinelli probably would have won that.
But they had to go with Ken Cuccinelli.
They had to go with Ken Cuccinelli, who was one of the crazier people that they could have possibly gone with, because the crazies made sure that he was the, you know, candidate. So hopefully the crazies will make sure that he is the candidate, because I don't think he's won the primary yet.
No. I guess they're not out of the primary yet. But
so that'll be great.
It's an
exciting one.
It'll
make for a good congressional race right there. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Sheldon Adelson, most famous for wanting to move the U.S. Embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, now also wants to make sure that Israel gets to the moon. Only years and years after other countries have been doing this forever.
It seems like a waste of
money. Years and years after we've even stopped trying to go to the moon.
Right.
We're over the moon in this country. But not. I don't mean that in the Proverbs.
Right.
Over
it.
We're literally
the
over
moon.
It.
Yeah.
We went and we're over it.
Yeah.
Sheldon Adelson is basically like single-handedly funding this Israeli mission to the moon.
Yeah, he's giving half the money, pretty much. He gave $16.4 million, which of the $37 million total budget.
Yeah.
So he almost half of it.
Almost
just
half,
of half
the
half
budget
of
is just Sheldon Adelson. To the Space IL program in Israel, which is, quote, going to make aiming to make a soft landing of an unmanned spacecraft on the surface of the moon, move 500 meters, and transmit video, images, and data back to Earth by the end of 2015.
Right. So they're
we have rovers going to Mars already.
I was going to say, they're catching up to, you know, the 1960s,
like,
basically.
Can they just, like, join our and Russia's already active space programs and, like, try to do something productive and new?
Right.
Like, is sending an unmanned craft to the moon helping anyone know anything? No. We've done it. We're over it.
Yeah.
We have sent men to the moon.
Mm-hmm. They're going to, what else do they, they want to also try and grow plants.
Yeah. They're trying to set up a colony, obviously, on the moon.
Fine.
Maybe he
wants to move the embassy to the moon.
I remember when the IMAX first came to New York, like that, the first IMAX theater came to New York, and they had this, it was just educational programming at the time. No real movies were being shown on IMAX.
Yeah.
And they had this educational movie that was about starting a colony on the moon. And I remember very distinctly there being a greenhouse on the moon. So maybe this is a possibility that we've been talking about for years.
Yeah.
And Israel is really on the cutting edge.
Then.
It was in a movie, you know? In any case, speaking of crazy nonsense that's going on. I was gonna try to connect it, but then, well, I forgot. We had talked about the Cokes earlier in the podcast, and I forgot that we had just talked about Sheldon Adelson, who's not them.
Here, how about this? Speaking of rich Republican money bags.
Thank you. That was the connection I was searching for.
Okay, good.
I could not put into words. I was just trolling Think Progress earlier, like a person does.
Yeah.
And came upon an interesting article that's not breaking news or anything, but is about Coke Industries getting a huge amount in subsidies from an Obamacare program that they were actively, you know, protesting.
Mm, yes.
So there is this Affordable Care Act program that helps employers and states keep coverage for individuals over 55 who aren't eligible for Medicare subsidies but still need to have health insurance. Coke Industries is an employer, as you might know.
Yes.
And they applied for the program in 2010, along with a bunch of other critics of the Obamacare package.
Like a bunch of programs, state-run programs in Texas applied for it.
Trying to reject any and all.
A bunch of members of the board of directors of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is like
conservative. Who were spending millions trying to fight this law.
Right.
They applied for this program. They got $1.4 million in subsidies. The program has a $5 billion budget. And the House Republicans in 2011, a year after they applied and got all this money, issued a press release that characterized this as a bailout fund for state governments, Fortune 500 companies, who they love. So,
I know.
Stop yourself. And Hollywood unions.
Oh, I see.
The worst Hollywood unions. Just them, not other unions.
No, I know. Exactly. But it does seem like, you know, bailing out state governments and Fortune 500 companies seems to be a thing that they would be into. Like, I don't know why they were so upset about that.
It's so bizarre, their sort of cognitive disassociation or cognitive dissonance when it comes to state, federal funding for states.
Yeah.
Because all of the big Republican states receive more federal funding than they pay out in taxes.
Oh, of course.
So, like, they are winning in the federal funding game.
Yeah.
So, in essence,
they're getting all of our money.
The states that Republicans are most likely to get elected in should just love the idea of federal governments giving money to states.
Obviously, it's how they're existing.
it's why there are Republican voters in the first place. It's because they're able to just freeload off of the rest of us.
Yeah.
And they love talking about freeloaders.
They do.
They're the worst freeloaders.
Yeah.
But it's also, it's like funny that they would call out Fortune 500 companies who are like paying all of their bills.
I know.
And it's funny that, I mean, the Hollywood unions comment is real funny. Well, it's like, what the
weird.
Fuck?
I know.
But in any case, we just thought you should know that that was happening.
Yes.
Because another thing that you should know was happening is that Al Sharpton was an FBI informant in the case against the Genovese crime family. This doesn't surprise me one bit, but also surprises me a lot. I have a lot of thoughts about this.
I want to hear all of them.
Is hilarious.
First off, in all of these articles that we're writing about this, my favorite part of them, and this is just me being a terrible person, but were the photos from back in the day of Al Sharpton. We all remember when Al Sharpton was morbidly obese. But, I mean, to look at photos of him back in the 80s is a real trip.
Yeah. Also to remember that in the 80s, no one took him seriously. Like, it's funny to me, anytime news about Al Sharpton doing anything in the 80s comes up, because Al Sharpton has long been a guy who just sort of jumps in front of a camera at any event.
Yeah.
But in the 80s, he was doing that and no one was taking him seriously. Now he's on MSNBC, like, liberals are sort of,
TV show.
He's like back, you know, in the game.
Yeah.
But at the time, everyone thought he was just like a crazy person who was just like in love with himself.
Yeah.
So the fact that he was doing this in the 80s and the fact that he was even in a position to be an informant against a crime family of Italians. It's just, like, so bizarre to me anyway.
I know. Like, it's weird. He was apparently the confidential informant number 7 in the 80s. And he has claimed that he was not doing this, actually. He claimed that he was cooperating with the FBI. And he was quoted as saying, "I'm not a rat, I'm a cat." Which is something that he would say.
Sharpton.
Yeah, exactly. But apparently, like, this was a report, like, on the Smoking Gun.
Yeah.
I think, the website, the Smoking Gun.
Yeah.
And they claimed that Sharpton was working for a joint FBI and New York Police Department crime task force that was, pursuing... Oh, yeah, the Genovese crime family. But they were, like, apparently, like, he was, like, going out to, like, meet them with, like, bugged suitcases and, like, sort of, like...
the Genovese crime family. Like,
what?
I mean, I would deny that I had done this, too.
Exactly.
Because I know that they put a bunch of them behind bars, but I would not trust that they're totally inactive.
Yeah. But apparently, it was quite helpful. Like, the information that he obtained, like, apparently led to, like, them being able to bug, like, a couple of the Genovese family social clubs that they were running and, like, 3 cars and, like, a bunch of phone lines and stuff. Like, he was really doing it.
Useful. Probably the most useful he was in the 80s.
Probably.
But that was just
I do love Al Sharpton.
I know. I love Al Sharpton.
I can't even.
But I love and hate Al Sharpton.
I know.
It's like, yeah. It's hard to, in the 80s, I would have really, like, it was really hard. I mean, I was a kid, so it wasn't that hard for me.
Right.
But, like, are my memories of 80s and 90s era Al Sharpton are just, like, too hilarious for me to take seriously.
I know.
And then now he's, like, kind of turned into this, like, big, kind of, like,
yeah.
Civil rights focused, like,
yeah.
credible person. So it's, like, hard to know.
It's weird.
with yeah. Al Sharpton. I love any news about him, though.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in final news, Pope Francis learned absolutely nothing from his meeting with Obama because he did not take away the cardinal rule of being a public figure.
Right.
Just don't take selfies with strangers.
That's what he was doing.
It was that he led a Palm Sunday service in St. Peter's Square. Mm-hmm. There were like 100,000 people there,
yeah.
like there are.
Do you know what Palm Sunday is?
No, of course not. I've heard of it. That's why I said it like I knew.
I was curious.
No,
I was
just, in my mind, I was like, I don't know what fucking Palm Sunday is.
I have to explain Easter to you every year. And this every is part year. Of the...
Well, I know, it's a, I know it's a part of Easter week. Things.
This is when Jesus entered Jerusalem on his donkey, like before he was, you know, executed.
Right.
And people apparently were like waving palms, like when he
there was
like,
a holiday that's in. Just people waving palms at Jesus yeah, as he entered waving, Jerusalem.
And so like a lot of times like at churches, like people like walk in with palms and you like wave palms and stuff like that.
Oh, that's weird. Mm-hmm. That's yeah. cult-like.
I said executed. I meant crucified. I mean, he was executed.
He was executed.
But I mean,
that was
I
what just, crucifying is.
That is. But in my, I just realized yeah. after I said it, I was like, that's not
it's
what
not
I
the
meant
right
to
word.
Say. No.
Anyway. That's not the sort of like religious-y word that you
no.
use.
Crucifixion.
But anyway, after the service, which was presumably about things that are boring, Pope Francis went into the crowd and took a bunch of selfies.
Yeah.
So that's what he's up to.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real modern-day Pope.
He is.
He's only a million years old, so... Scott.
How old is he? He's in his
70s,
right?
He's in his 70s, but I think he's early 70s.
Oh, no, is he? I think he's like in his late 70s, mid to late 70s
really?
Or something.
They always pick such an old person to be pope.
I know. You
I
can't,
feel like...
You can't be a young pope, though.
No. Well,
like,
also,
have...
this gives them chance for turnover, because they have made some mistakes.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, when you select a young pope and he turns out to be an ex-Nazi...
Boy, I know.
You have a problem on your hands.
Yeah.
So... This is maybe a wise choice.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
In any case, that's the news this week. I apologize that I had a hack and cough through the entire podcast.
I don't think it was that bad, actually.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
No.
And next week, hopefully, I will be cough-free.
I hope so.
And also, are we going to...
It's Easter.
It's Easter next week.
We'll have Easter news.
Yeah.
I'm having an Easter lunch.
Yeah, Brent's hosting Easter.
Yeah, glazing a ham.
At which he will explain to me what Easter celebrates.
Yeah.
Again.
And
like
maybe,
he does every
and maybe
year.
To you.
Yes. We might have to put it somewhere into the world in a... You know, in a sort of
yeah.
permanent
Well, there'll
way.
Be Easter news. Maybe there'll be Easter selfies.
Oh,
probably
Easter
will
selfies.
Be.
I mean
they'll be having
be
a, they'll be having a church service.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
Yeah, I did once go to church on Easter. Have I ever told you about my one? This is the only time I've legitimately gone to a church service.
Then I'm surprised that you can't remember what it is, because I would have thought that you would have been so horrified
not
by what was happening.
If you might imagine.
Oh, okay. Right.
I mean, it was a big. I think it was an Episcopalian church or something like that.
Okay.
I went with friends I was visiting over the holidays.
Yeah.
We had an Easter egg hunt, and then we went to church.
Yeah.
My mom refused to go.
Uh-huh.
I had to borrow a skirt that was long enough for my friend. Friends that only go to church on Easter. And then I sat in a state of boredom for what felt like hours.
It was probably 1 hour.
Couldn't have been longer than an hour, but it felt like it took all day.
Uh-huh.
And then we left, and then we ate food.
Yeah.
Just, I guess, what
you're We're just going to do the food part.
Yeah, thank God. I'm yeah. not going to church.
I
that's
might,
for sure.
But
yeah.
sure.
You're welcome to. By yourself.
Thank you.
In any case, that's the news this week. We will be back on Easter to tell you about what that's
Easter.
What that's all about. Bye.
All right, bye.